This is a show about facing fear, unlocking courage, and taking action.
Courage isn't necessarily a daunting thing.
It's going to give you more purpose. It's going to give you more drive.
It feels like making a courageous decision is going to get you closer to who you aspire to be.
It's knowledge plus faith plus action equals courage.
I want everyone on my team to feel the power of doing the work, making things that are impactful for the business and impactful for the brand. If you're not putting stuff out there and seeing how people react to it, then what are we doing? Like, sometimes you make mistakes and other times it's like, it's glorious.
So let me get this straight now. You've been doing this for 20 years.
This is the first question that we're going to have together?
Yeah, we're right out of the gate, man. I mean, you've done some cool shit. I like that I know you from last life, and then I got to see you kind of in that middle purgatory arena, which is probably really annoying when you're like, what should I do next? What am I going to do next? And now here you are making cool shit again in your new life. How are you doing? Like, are you, when you think about the rock skipping across the pond, are you liking where the rock is going?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The best part about a professional career is that as long as you feel like you're moving forward and you're focused on the work, then good things are going to come, you know, and they come along the way, no matter where you are. So I'm super pumped to be at Autodesk. Like, what we get to do here is really amazing. And I think the opportunity with the company and to build a brand is right in front of me. And the customer base is super special with what they do with our software. So yeah, very excited. You know, we knew each other from the Peloton days.
Yeah. Which could be, I mean, that, by the way, my, like, it's one, this podcast, Peloton's been very good to this podcast. Like, we met from that. Matt, shout out to Jason Harris from Mechanism, because yeah, I think he brought us together. He's probably going to get pissed that he's like, why wasn't I invited to come back on the show? Okay, Jay, we will get you back on the show. He says, don't they? He hasn't invited me on his podcast.
Yeah, yeah. He had me on the cast.
I'm going to pause this right now and call him and be like, why haven't I been invited on the podcast? But then Emma Lovewell has been on the show. And it's, what's funny is Hannah Corbin has a book coming out right now. And so she's going to be coming on the show. So Peloton's been you guys have been very good to me. But I like that you and I stayed in touch. And it was like, oh, yeah, like, we're kind of like similar. There's something about the work that, although I liked, I think I read somewhere you're like, I'm the original brand side trader. Dun, dun, dun.
I gotta be dramatic when you're writing about yourself. You know what I mean?
So for people that don't know, let's give them sort of your history of being a trader to where where you were before all that.
Yeah. So the shtick is, for the majority of my career, I've been on the brand side, and I came up as a creative person, designer by trade, and then obviously started to open up that aperture of what I would do within that skill set. So art direction, I'm not too bad at writing. So, like, you know, you become a designer, do a little
bit. It's a great t-shirt. I'm not too bad at writing. It feels like great t-shirt.
You know, you open up the aperture of what you're capable of. And when your ambitions meet your talents, like, you know, you get to do lots of cool stuff. So, you know, I've been able to do work at some interesting brands. You know, I was head of creative at Barnes & Noble for a number of years and worked on all their digital offering plus their physical spaces, which I loved, as well as their, you know, I kind of date myself with this one, but like digital reading with their Nook devices, which was a Kindle competitor. Back in those days, you know, Amazon and Barnes & Noble were actually like in a bit of a heated battle, if you can believe it. And now those are great times. I mean, those are periods of my professional career where I really learned how much I love product design and how much I love launching products into the market and then seeing what customers think of them and like getting feedback and, you know, launching a product and then ending the life of a product. Like, every part of that journey as a marketer, I've just always enjoyed. And then it's gone on to, you know, I got like this mix of big brand and then startup world. So you go from Barnes & Noble to a company like Savant, which is Internet of Things. So, you know, like a Tom Brady has it in his house. Bono has it in his castle. Press one button and all the things you're lighting.
It couldn't have been called Internet of Things back then, though, right?
No, it's right on the cusp of, you know, IoT.
Yeah.
But prior to that, yeah, you're right. It was, these were all custom installs.
Yeah.
It was all wired. So you press a button, but that was all wired throughout your entire house to be able to control your music and climate. And then, you know, with the advent of connecting those devices via your Wi-Fi, unlocks all different types of experiences. So I love that too. We had a little studio down in Soho, which was a blast. You had to hire
you. Nice.
Let's see how that goes. And then I went to Peloton. I was at Peloton for 6 years. So, you know, I liken it to like within 6 years of time, probably equaled about 15 years in a person's professional journey. But I loved it at Peloton. You go from startup to building a company towards an IPO. You go public. You're traversing that landscape. And then, you know, the pandemic hits us. And Peloton blows up as a brand and as a product being sold into the market, which was, you know, wild, completely wild ride. And then you kind of come on the other side of that too, where, you know, there's transitions and changes and you have to make your own professional choices on, you know, how much you want to stay at some place for. But my time at Peloton was amazing. Like to build a brand with that core team from the early days and then, you know, makes something that was part of culture and respond in real time to culture to, you know, how we put things in the market was unbelievable. That's what Jason obviously worked. He and I met one another and our teams worked together in addition to all the other teams that were at Peloton, which were fun. And then from there, I was like, you know what? I did the big company thing and now I want to go back and investigate my kind of startup roots again. So I joined a company called Fi. You're like, this is when you and I are talking all the time. Like, what are you up to?
Bro? Yeah. Yeah. You good? You liking it?
Yeah. And you know what? Fi is amazing. It's one of those companies, Series B, the same type of tech as like your Apple Watch or Fitbit or Ring or Whoop, but it's for your dog. And the world loves their dogs right now. You know, more people are having their getting dogs as dog parents and they are having children. There's like that chart that is showing like where that crossover is. And that was fun. You know, you're building a brand from like super early days and working on the product and living the product. I'm a huge believer that you have to, you know, eat your own dog food, so to speak. You know, you have to love.
Nice pun there. Thank you for doing that.
Well timed. You have to love the brand and the product that you're working on. Because that's when you get the best work. You get the best out of you as a creative and marketer, and you're able to support and push your team to do the best work that they can do when you really love the thing that you're working on. So now I'm at Autodesk. It went from Fi to Autodesk, which I think it's just a tremendous opportunity for a brand or a creative person.
Totally.
Large legacy brand's been around for 40 years, has always made incredible product, has a customer base that is just all inventors and creatives. If you think about like, you know, your podcast, like it's all about courage, right? To come up with the idea to then begin to shape it, build it, you know, what does it mean? And then go through all the like trials and tribulations of iteration. It's just super interesting. It's human ingenuity that we give people the capability to work through. So I'm having fun. Yeah.
What a ride. You know, it's cool. Cause like there's about four or five times I almost interrupted you and I'm glad I didn't. Cause I like when you hear the arc and it's almost crazy to think that in 3 minutes, 4 minutes, you could succinctly get it down to that. But if you unpack it, like you talk about your start at Barnes & Noble, right? And like, and Nook, right? And like, yeah. Really, that was the, like, it, everything sort of adds up. It all makes sense that
you're now
at Autodesk. But I get it. Like, you like startups. You like being at the cusp of culture and like rocket shipping them into spaces. You like, now you have this colossal legacy brand that's not acting like a legacy brand anymore. I think I just saw the whole make anything camp. I'm assuming you're a part of that. It sure feels like you were a part of that, although you would never, you know, be a me guy. I know you're a we guy, but it was cool to sort of see that come out and get going. As you've gone through these stages, and I'm going to go here more for the audience to think through, like, when you're in it, you're just in it. You're in the different stages, like the Barnes & Noble stage, we'll call it, however you landed there. I was probably, again, I know too much about you too, so keep me honest when I'm right or when I'm wrong. Like, that was before family probably and kids. You had all day to learn. You had all day to be there for the entire marketing life cycle because you're like, I have to figure this out. I've got to stay competitive and it's fun. I mean, was that like, how much of your time went to Barnes & Noble, went to working back then?
Oh, 100, like 100%. Always. I mean, I'm out. When I mentioned before that you have to love what you do, like when that's like, when you go to a place that is what is happening, then work is not work anymore, right? It's what you think about, it's what you obsess about, it's what you want to do. It's, you know, some people might not agree with me, but it's like, it replaces a hobby for me because I just want to figure out the problem all the time. And I just really love to figure out the problem that I'm working on. And, you know, just the opportunity to do that, these companies has been so much fun. Like, if you actually look at my career, so early days was my first like brand side job was at a company called Index Stock Imagery. And that was also a startup. And probably the first place I learned to love being on the brand side, because I had to do all these different things. I had to be the brand guy, do the logos, do the website, the commerce, do installations, all and anything that was in communication front, I was in charge of.
What I love about your career is it's like, it is a love story. Like, I know how much you love your dog. I remember all those calls with you and your dog, right? Like, I felt like we like, so that's a love story. And then I know Peloton was a love story, right? I mean, and you got to like be on the cusp of culture. So the flip of that is like, yeah, those few moments where you were on the sideline, where you weren't working.
Yeah.
Did you just hate it? Did you just like, could you find joy in those moments to be like there for your family, or you found there for your dog, or were you like, I'm parked on the sideline. Like, I want to get back in. Like, how fast can I get back in? And was that hard?
Yes, it was hard coming out of like, you're always going to then not going. Because I was like, deliberately, like, I'm going to take a break. Yeah, hard. Like, you're so used to that rhythm of being a maker that when you're not actively making on the things that you are working, the brand that you work in, it's definitely an adjustment. Now, with that said, it probably took me about 2 or 3 weeks to kind of decompress from, you know, being so focused on work. And in that time period, I actually took my son Cooper to New Orleans, went away. Like, anything to kind of break my thought pattern and begin to like, okay, cool. Like, I got to make sure that I'm focusing on family, which I did. And like, I love being with my boys. Like, Cooper's 17, Max is 14. My wife, Lisa, they're all grown now since, you know, the years ago. Yeah, I like giving them the attention. And I like being around them as much as possible. I think the way that someone like you and I work is we try to integrate our work life into our home life. And some people don't agree with that either, but it's the only way I've ever found where I could make sure I can be present for both, you know, in a way that like you're blocking a little bit of time for work when you need it, but then you could be at the baseball game. You could be at the crew race. You know, you could be part of these things that are just super important to your family because you don't want to lose touch with, you know, what's important. Yeah.
Well, what's crazy is like, as you were sharing this, I couldn't help but be like, oh, New Orleans, like the perfect city to go be inspired as a creative, right? Like it's the food and the flavor. New Orleans is the most flavorful city in the country. I'd put that up against, like, I'd put New Orleans up against any city. It's just like, you can't not have a good time down there, right? So,
oh, and the art scene's amazing too.
When you're down there, so you can't help but be inspired. You're like, oh, stay in dad mode, stay in dad mode. Or you're like, oh, I'm just inspired by that. And like, it's all of the above. I'm curious, as you took on this new role, let's say you are in a city and you were between, let's say you were in New Orleans on a family trip and you're with your family, but like they go to bed at whatever time they go to bed. Like, the 17-year-old at some point wants to hang out with 17-year-old friends or whatever they're going to do. So when you're out and about, what's your criteria? Like, what was your criteria for this new, like, how did you know to say yes to this opportunity?
At Autodesk?
Yes.
Yeah. The first filter is always, can I love the brand? You know, can I love the products? I think that's always been my first kind of gauge. If yes, then it's okay, what's the opportunity? And that opportunity at each place is very different. At Autodesk, it's being able to build a brand, kind of reveal, you know, this incredible brand that's been hidden in many ways for so many years. So then it's like, what is that canvas that I'm going to play in? Like, can I really be a creative person? Can I really build and be a brand marketer? Like, I'm also a strong believer that all the places that you go to work and the products that you're working on should feel like you're leaving a bit of like legacy. There's an artifact of what you have done in your career that could be pointed to. And, you know, one of those, like we've already talked about, like a Barnes & Noble, like I can always point to that. And my sons can understand that. Like, well, I work so hard. They know that, oh, dad did Connected Fitness at Peloton.
So cool.
there's a legacy to our professional careers that, you know, I think we all should want that. We should all want to leave something behind that someone can point to and be like, oh yeah, my dad did that, or my brother did that, or, you know, my husband did that, or wife.
I mean, we're eerily similar, like living parallel lives. Mine just happens to be courage, right? And you're like, you know, yours, I think yours is even more integrated in the fabric of reality of life. Like, you can't not run by a Barnes & Noble or see a Peloton. And I'm sure this is the goal at Autodesk now. But like, for me, it's, I think my kids are picking up on what I'm putting down when I'm not around, right? Like, I'm on a mission to help people, leaders, be more courageous. I want teams to be more courageous. What's the courageous conversation we're not having that we should have? What's the courageous idea? I mean, the more I do this, the more I realize I'm like, I'm Bubba Gump in Forrest Gump. Like, there's all this way that shrimp Creole, shrimp burger, like, it's basically that for courage. It's like courageous ideas, courageous decisions, courageous conversations. Like, which, you know, where do you need courage the most? And that's where we're going to swoop in, and we're going to start there and then work your way through the spectrum. And that's, there's joy. I can't not design a life where I'm not doing something that it's not real to me. I'm not passionate about. I still love brand. I still love courageous ideas. You know, so let's say we take the time machine ride 1,000 days into the future. And actually, you know what? Quick sidebar, because I always blow this. Are you in you're in Boston, right?
No.
You're in New York still.
I'm in Hoboken.
Jeez. Hoboken, blow that.
Right across from Manhattan. Best view of the city is from Hoboken.
But your sports teams, your baseball team is...
Oh, yeah. It's all Boston. Like,
okay, DNA, that's why I blew it.
DNA. Like, anyone that's watching this is from Boston. If I were to say, like, now I like the Yankees, like, there'd be so much hate within your comments. But now they know that Sox, Yanks, Pats, Celtics.
You said Yanks. Ruin. You said Yanks. You slipped them in there. Listen, you're the original brand side trader. You said it yourself. Who's your baseball team? No, I'm kidding. I know it was a tough look. That's We're both in mourning as a Padres fan. I'm in mourning. You're in mourning. We'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that. All right. So, okay. We take the time machine ride 1,000 days from now. Right. You're on this path already with Autodesk. Legacy wise. And again, let's say you're there for 10 years. Great. Awesome. But you're on your way. Right. What's changed?
People will recognize Autodesk as like being part of culture, but there's momentum to it. Like the unexpected places that Autodesk can show up and in the back of people's heads when they're walking around, what is that Autodesk? Well, I know Autodesk, or if it's a customer, they're like, yeah, I'm part of Autodesk. I use that software. Like when you get to that word of mouth flywheel, you're activating the brand and all of these different places. That's what I'd love to see, the momentum happening, you know, in that time frame. Like if you look at a year from now, I come back on here a year from now, like, B, what'd you do? And I'll list 15 things that we had done, right? But what will get me really excited is if there's like a buzz around the brand.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people know what you all do. Like, and I think that's the opportunity, right? Like, just to be clear, if you haven't looked up Autodesk, it's a software tool that helps people design and build stuff. Like, I mean, that's pretty much what it is. Like, everything from, I don't know if this is how you would describe it, but like buildings and bridges and cars and movies and video games. It's a software company that builds tools to design anything and everything. And I liked your new Make Anything. And, you know, you kind of already teased that. You can't help yourself a little bit. Like, you talk about yourself being a maker. Like, it is for you, right? Like, makers welcome, right? Like, it's really what it's all about.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that ended up being at the front of what made me attracted to the company and the brand is the people that use the software are creators, right? They're innovators. To your point of what you just said, everything around us, it could be made with Autodesk software. It is the Freedom Tower. It is, you know, the restoration of Notre Dame, right? That's insane to think that the impact this company has on something so historical with Notre Dame. It's all of those movies. Right, it's all those big blockbuster movies that have animations in 3D, like all the things that we love and know around us. This company has helped to support and propel into the creation process, and it's from beginning to end. So it's design and make, which is super cool.
Yeah, I have to be careful not to fall into the slippery slope of a brainstorm session with you, because I'm getting geeked by the opportunity of, like, you're right. Like you said at the beginning, like courage is sort of I've always said courage is a journey word. Like courage is not, I think because of movies and the news, courage gets looked at as like a cherry on top that comes at the end. No, it's at the beginning. It's at the beginning. Like,
I totally agree.
You know something, you feel something, you're going to leap. You take that, you leap. And then once you've leapt, it's like, well, what am I going to make? So in some ways you can make a case that Autodesk is also very much an act one. So it's not just act one, but like makers welcome. Like, what are you going to create today? Like, that is an act one message. It might be really interesting. This is, I got to be careful how it plays an act, right?
100%. Yeah. Like every creative idea requires an ample amount of courage to venture into the idea, to show the idea, to share the idea with others, to get feedback, to just continue the build process and iteration. Like, they're kind of twins, like creativity and courage. You know, they're kind of two sides of the same coin in many ways.
I like that. So you've seen a lot of battles at this point. You've seen a lot of rooms, and it's like, the more you do it, right? I'm almost back to the criteria. Like, there's like the opportunity for the brand. Like, can I love it? Like you said. But then once you're in there, there's, you know, as a leader, there's courageous leadership up. So you have to manage up on your philosophy, or where are we aligned on that philosophy? There's a cross with your peers that may or may not have gotten brand. And obviously, like, my usual take on this is if somebody hired you, it probably meant that we weren't land. It wasn't there yet. Like you're being brought into, it's a to be continued story.
Yeah.
There's some work to be done. And then you've got to like create the space for your team, right? So now, so you're working your way up, you're working across with your peers, and then you're creating the conditions for your team, right? Like even the way you had written something on LinkedIn recently, like now we're getting there. Like it felt like you're trying to like, it wasn't end all be all. It was very like, we're like, this team is getting there. We're doing it.
Yeah, it's a journey.
So talk to me about what you look for. And this doesn't have to be specific to Autodesk, but as you try to like go, I know I can do something with this brand in theory, but practicality, like, does the leader allow me? Can I actually do it? So how did you go about knowing this is the right, these are the right people for me, this is the right leader for me?
That's a great question. And I think every time I've joined these brands, one of those big components is like, well, who am I working for? And is that person going to give me the level of ownership that allows me to go on a journey, right? The journey of success and failure and success and leaps and bounds and disasters and all the things. And I think each of those, I've had great leaders. So at Autodesk, you know, it's Dara. And Dara and I worked at Peloton together. So, you know, we know how to work with one another. And many times we could finish each other's sentences or at least have a thought about, I think I know where she's headed. And that's helpful, you know, and vice versa. She can say like five words to me and I'm going to get the direction. And then the affordance to be able to run. Like, I love it when people, and Peloton's the same way. So John Foley was the founder. William Lynch was the president. William Lynch was the CEO of Barnes & Noble. These individuals always gave me the latitude to go run and be successful and build. They trusted me with my team and to shape my team in a way that they could be amazing at their craft. When you get that, it's so empowering that you just want to make sure that you're doing that for others. Like John Foley, anyone that is watching this that was at Peloton. And I have said this to people on my team too, like when you join, he would say, you know, I want you to paint your masterpiece here. And there's something incredibly empowering about statements like that, that you could do for your team, that you could do for others, that allows them to go make big decisions and, you know, be courageous with their curiosity, what they want to do and how they go about doing it. So, yeah, a big part of it is joining Autodesk was also like, who do I get to work with? And Dara is one of those individuals for sure would want to come and join up again with. And then meeting the team, like really talented individuals at the executive level, you know, just as talented as you think about the broader population of the teams. The first week I came in, we had essentially an offsite. And I got the
new. Hey, thanks for that call. That was awesome. I appreciated that. That's nice. Thanks.
Different type of offset. That was Zoom.
Yeah. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Hey.
But you just get to see the density of talent within an organization. And at Autodesk, there's people that have been there for, you know, a longer period of their professional career. And then you have people that have been there on the, what I'd say, like the newer side. But the blend of them is, in my 4 months of being here, is really kind of magical, right? So it's a company in transformation. You know, it's always striving for better, and the craft skills that the teams want to embark upon are like at the forefront of their thinking. So, yeah, it's been good in that sense.
What percent of your team, you know, if I could have been a fly on the wall at an offsite, and again, this isn't me putting myself where I don't belong, just to be clear. I'm like, what do they want? Like, what do they want? Like, what do you think when you ask them what was missing, like life before you and life after you, Like, could they, is this a place where they can do the best work of their life? Is this a place where they, do they feel they were empowered to do that before? I just never got over the goal line. Do you feel like that's what this team wants? Do they see themselves as makers, right? I mean, if you guys are going to be in the make anything business, they got to be makers themselves. Yes.
You know, I think what they want is what we all want as craft experts, is leadership that lets them excel and gives them the right amount of support to do better. And, you know, I can't speak to the prior regimes of like who was doing what, but I know, you know, my endeavor is to do the best work and to put the best work out there. Like, you always have to show it, right? I'm not big on talking about the work and pitching the work. I do all that stuff, but like, I want to do the work, and I want everyone on my team to feel the power of doing the work and making things that are impactful for the business and impactful for the brand and seeing it out in the world, right? It doesn't, if you're not putting stuff out there and seeing how people react to it, then what are we doing? Like, the whole point is to like build a brand. Sometimes you make mistakes, and other times it's like, it's glorious to see what you can make as like an artist and a craft specialist. So yeah, I think my job, it's one of the things I love the most. You know that about me. I love the team and building the team and like putting them in spots that are going to make them successful, even when they don't even know it. Like, they're like, oh my God, B is putting me here. Like, what am I doing? And then all of a sudden they make something that's really great, you know?
So I have two final questions for you. And one's personal and one's professional. The personal one's still related to work, but it's like how, I don't want to give it too much away. I want to give you a choose your own adventure. On which one do you want first? You want the personal or professional?
Let's go professional first.
Okay. So, and then we'll come back to personal. So this is my favorite question. This really is. I don't think I've asked it much.
You didn't ask this of me before? Okay.
No, I don't know if I've asked this. Probably because I haven't run into, it'll make sense once I ask it, but I love this question in non-podcast form, like when you're catching up with somebody. So here we go. I've now built this big ass question up. Would you rather take a brand that no one knows of and put them on the map, or would you rather take a brand that everybody knows and make people think differently of them?
Well, so Autodesk doesn't fit in this one. You know that, right?
This is just my question. I'm just thinking about your background in general. And I'm curious which you'd pick. Hey, no one's heard of this brand. You're at a startup and you're like, we're going to put them on the map. Bam. Or Nike, right? Like, everyone knows Nike. So it's hard to change people's perspective of a brand. You think you know the brand, and you could actually successfully get them to think differently about a brand.
Yeah. My drive is to go to places that I can have, I think, maximum impact, in the sense of a bit more of a blank canvas. So it would probably be the former. Like, if you're taking something that is maybe nascent, early stage, or no one knows about it in a broad awareness state, and I have the ability with my team to expose it to the world in like fun and interesting ways. Like, yeah, I love that. The thing about the established brands, and I'm sure there'll be people that be like, you're crazy. But if you go to like one of the larger brands, you're a little bit pocketed into, you know, a look and feel that is so established that you don't have, it's not all the case. You always have a,
I'm not totally sold on that, right? Like if you got to work on Netflix as they moved into streaming, right? From DVDs.
Fair. That's great opportunity.
I still really love the, I just think it's so hard to change our minds on something, you know? It's like Domino's. I'm not saying Domino's is, you know, it's like, shame on me to bring it up to a guy.
Domino's is really good though.
I talk about Domino's all the time, right? Like they used to be the 30 minutes or less company, and now look at them, right? So like, I talk about them all the time. Bravo, right? That wasn't a Silicon Valley company, but the position as a tech company happens to sell pizza. Like, I think that's, Those are cool. Little, like, that's hard to change people's perception of a brand once you, like, you've had an experience with them. So I think they're both equally interesting. I don't think there's a right or a wrong. You know, just was curious to hear your take.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay. Personal. You ready? Put your seatbelt on.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. No, as you've gone through the last, you know, 20 years, 25 years, what do you love most about your approach that's changed today? That when you were like a first time in at Barnes & Noble or early days, whatever it was, even early days of Peloton, to you, the leader now,
yeah.
Whether it's like what's changed in a positive, and also what's one thing you're like, I don't think I'm as good as I was. I can be more patient. What's one place where you feel like you could still, like, you know, we get older, we get fickle, we become fickle creatures. I don't know. What's one positive and one opportunity for you?
All right. On the positive evolution front, I'd say over time I've become much more patient. And it probably goes to a little bit of like a belief, like how I go about work now. And this has been a bit of a journey, but what I've preached to my team as of late, actually, is this idea that as a marketer and a creative, you are in front of people all the time that are judging your work, right? You're getting feedback. You're potentially being told that wasn't the right brief. You should be working on this brief. There's just a level of feedback and scrutiny that in this world of advertising, marketing, creative, you know, can feel difficult for an individual, especially if you're an introvert. Go on the creative side, like you pick the hardest profession for you. Yeah. So I had this little mind shift I do, which is that we get to do this work. Instead of I have to do this work, this idea that, you know, we really get to do it. Like, it is a blessing to be able to be a creator and to make decisions and to be able to put decisions in front of people. And I think, you know, my early days were, I had an opinion and I just wanted that to go through. And I felt like I had to do those things, hurdles, to get to the other side. And when you think of it that way, you build up frustrations, right? Someone might have given you feedback you didn't love, or maybe a requirement changed, or you don't have the budget you had before. And it puts you in a mindset of defensiveness, as opposed to just being open to, all right, what am I doing? All right, what am I doing now? You know? And there's, when you kind of change that headset, everything's kind of a little bit more happy. You know what I mean?
I've heard it before, but not in this framing. And I really like it for our business, because also I do think when you're younger, it's such a competitive grind. You're trying to like make your way and show your way. And you're like, I have to get through this round of creative, and it's so subjective. And that's why they picked it. And it's like, wait a minute, no, you're missing. There's almost like a goodness to, I get to do, like, you know, and maybe that's also part of it. Like, maybe when we were that age and we were starting, there were people that we were reporting into, or the people we were reporting into that they were already there and they were already at the get to, but I wasn't there. I was just trying to make a name for myself as a creative in a gauntlet of competitiveness, which was the world I came from. So I feel that joy that comes with that framing. It's a really nice one. Okay. What about on the other side?
All right. On the other side, I think, I kind of, sort of. So as you come up, you get a little more detached from the work. That could be your strategy work. It could be brief writing. It could be a campaign or whatever, because you're empowering others. And sometimes when you do that, you feel like you're on the outskirts. And I like to continue to tune my craft, right? And to work with my team, make sure they're doing their thing. But like, is actually coming out of Peloton, when I went to Phi, a big part of my endeavor there was to be closer to like the like really close because we were a startup, right? It was a small team. So I had the flex muscles that I wasn't flexing anymore, which I think helped set me up coming into Autodesk. We're like, okay, cool. I got the little bit of my mojo came back, and I just love that. So like it fostered like, you know, a lot of deep thinking around AI and how do we integrate that? How do I integrate it into my life? Right. And then how do I integrate it into my team's world so that it's an empowering type of technology and not something that feels like it's taking away from their abilities. In many ways, it should be making them super, right? It should be raising boats. And when you take that headset, it's like you really jump into it. I feel like I'm learning again. And I love that aspect. So like being close to the work is something that I always want to keep doing. And there's just different ways of doing it.
This is almost a slippery slope rabbit hole because I already said two questions and we're there. But like, I am curious from an AI standpoint, like, you know, I agree. I think that we've talked to tears about AI in some ways, but if I'm on your team, how should I be thinking about AI? Give the listener maybe a different perspective on how AI might be able to be applied.
As we think about AI within a marketing and creative world, it should make you into the ultimate tastemaker. We all have these innate skills, right? We've honed these skills in our professional career, right? AI should be an amplifier of that. It should take me and put me at a plus 10 in my capabilities. So it's less about efficiencies or taking a job away from me. And it's more about how is it expanding me? How is it expanding our team, our team's capabilities, right? If you're a writer, right? A lot of copywriters are a little timid about AI because everyone can write. But, you know, it's only as good as what you put into it, right? So a craft person understands what can make something really amazing. A designer, an art director, an amazing brand strategist, they know the cues to tell, you know, AI, essentially a prompt, what is going to be great output. The layman person doesn't know that. They can ask AI to write a brief, but to write a really great brief, you need someone to kind of jump in and like shape it to a point that the result, what you get back, is something that maybe was unexpected, right?
Totally.
So I feel like it should be enhancing our ingenuity, right? That's how I would consider it.
I love that framing. And yes, the amount of time, it's almost like creative, like it's the creative director. It's like, it's not hard for a creative director to take a C- and make it a C+. It's hard to take a B+ or an A- and make it an A, right? And so like, I agree with you, like it starts with what your capability is. And then like, I like your 10X almost, your multiplier. It's a great, great way to think about it. It's the best ally and assistant if you so choose to use it that way and not be afraid of it. And that's the tool that it is, at least for today, from what I see.
There's always like these milestones of new technologies that hit us, right? Over the past decades and beyond. With AI, it's faster, right? But if you think about it under the kind of, you know, the guise of being courageous, like you're entering into a whole new world. So it's kind of having some courage on the unknown with this technology, but having the faith that if you think about it with the right intentions and that it can help you become stronger, then I feel like you can find the things that you could leverage it in just super interesting ways.
All right, folks, if you're a Boston fan and you live in Hoboken, you got to look up Brian Brennan. If you're a craftsman, a creative, find my guy. How do you want to take us out? Like, you know, this is a show about courage. I mean, it's a show about fear. There's a lot of fear going on right now in the world. How do you manage that fear? What piece of advice do you have for us on navigating this? I call it a worry war that we're living in, and we are in a worry war. But how do you want to, or not, or go more optimistic? I'm basically handing the mic over to you and how you'd like to wrap our episode.
Yeah, I'd say I'm gonna keep it, because I'm on your podcast, bro. I'm going to keep it to being courageous. You know how we do.
I love it.
I'd say with your teams, the most courageous teams that you can have within your organizations are the ones you lead. They're not individually fearless, right? They are fearless together. So harness the power of your team to solve the problems and support one another to be able to make that decision that feels uncomfortable to get to good work, because that's all we're trying to do is get to great work.
Beautiful. Brian Brennan, keep doing what you're doing, man. I love you.
Thanks for having me on the show again.
Keep doing your thing, and we'll get you back out. We're going to get you back out here in a couple of years, and we'll see if what that legacy looks like, and we'll keep it rolling. Deal?
Sounds great.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Courageous Podcast. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts so more people can find us. See you again next week.